Our reading for tonight comes from John chapter 15, beginning at verse 9. Jesus says, "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask in the Father, ask the Father in my name, he may give to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another." This is the word of the Lord. Well, tonight we get to talk about friendship and our roles in friendship. And I don't know if you're like me, but I have been blessed throughout my life with very good friends. There are certain friends that have guided me or are been of special importance to me during different seasons of my life. I can look back as I began to start high school. I went to a very small Lutheran school for middle school, and I began to go to a public 3,000-kid high school. And I was terrified. I was all of 4'10", 110 pounds. I was going to get beat up every day. I knew it. It was going to be awful. And so the summer before I entered the high school, at the YMCA, I got into a little rec league. And I got drafted by a team. And all the guys went to Fort Myers High School, the school I was going to go to. And they were all seniors. And I was the only freshman on their team. And it just so happens that the star of our little rec basketball team was also the star baseball player and basketball player at the school, the homecoming king, who also dated the homecoming queen, and she was the cheerleading captain. And his best friend was Phil Purcell, who is also the star defensive end of the football team. So right away, I get to be friends with them. I make friends with them. Throughout this summer, I'm getting to know them. And so as I enter high school on day one, they look at me and say, "Don't you worry about a thing. We got you." And so this star of the school, Brad Zacharitz was his name, was my best friend. And let me tell you, I did not leave his side, whether he wanted me to or not. I ate lunch with him. I walked in the hallway with him or his girlfriend. And I went everywhere I could with him. And for that season of my life, that freshman year, I had the protection I really needed. I had that safety net of a friend that I really needed. I can look at other seasons of my life. When I started middle school, the very first friend I made was a boy named Josh, who ended up being the best man at my wedding. And during the season of my life of middle school, high school, and the first couple years of college, Josh was my best friend. And during that season, he gave me one thing that I've never been able to see in any other friend, and that was absolute loyalty. Josh, if there is one word I can think of, it is loyalty. There was not a single time that I was in a principal's office or on my parents' couch being screamed at that he wasn't right next to me. I'm glad you caught that. It didn't matter what terrible idea he or I had, we were in it together. But during that season of my life, and even now, I cannot find another person, another male friend of mine that has been more loyal than Josh. Another season of my life, I was blessed. I had decided through the Lord's leading that I was going to head to Concordia, Austin to become a pastor and start the pre-sem program. And my random roommate just happened to be a boy named Jared. And Jared was... I was at that awkward transition phase of you know, about 18, 19 years old, of becoming a boy to a man. And Jared was definitely one who had already taken that leap of maturity. And I cannot tell you the incredible wisdom and the incredible guidance that I got from Jared through that time. He knew me better than I knew myself. I would sit there and struggle with this changing into a man, and he would push me and challenge me and hold me accountable. And he was such a pivotal part of my life for those 2 years. And I wouldn't be here without him. He was that important to helping me grow in my faith and as an immaturity of a man. And then in this last season of my life of marriage, I cannot count a greater friend than my wife and my companion, who every joy is with me and every sorrow is with me and every laugh and every tear is with me. And I would imagine in your life you have those friends as well. You have those important people through the different seasons of your life. Some we've parted with and that season is over, and some we've held on to. But the friendship and the importance of friendship is so vitally important in our lives. But what's amazing about our text here tonight is nothing, no friendship on this earth could even get minutely close to being friends with the God of the universe. I mean, I thought I was big and bad because I was friends with Brad Zacharitz in high school, and I was safe because I was with Brad. Can you imagine when you tap into this and understand what it truly means to be friends with the God of the universe? You know, in the Old Testament, it tells us about Moses and Abraham being friends with God. And here in our text tonight in the New Testament, Jesus says, you know what? My friendship is open. It's there for grabs. Who wants it? You want to be my friend? I'll be your friend. Jesus Christ, our Savior, doesn't say, I want you to be my servant. I want you to be obedient to me. I want you to be my slave. I want you to be beneath me. I want you to worship me and praise me. He says, I want to be your friend. Friends, tonight as we talk about friendship, we're going to talk about the role of being friends with one another. But we can't skip over this first. The first thing we have to talk about is Jesus wanting to be our friend, and what that truly means. See, in the passage that I read to you, starting in verse 14, Jesus says, if you want to be my friend, follow my command to you. And before we tackle what the command is, we have to understand how truly incredible this statement is. You see, in this day and age, Jesus was, what did they refer to him as? Rabbi, teacher. Jesus was a teacher. And in this day and age, the different rabbis, they were theologians of this day that walked around and teaching their understanding of the scriptures. As men would hear this, they would decide, I want to follow this certain rabbi. They heard and they picked who they followed. And they said, this is the rabbi I want to follow. Jesus radically flips this on his end. He seeks out his own followers. And he says it in the verses to follow. I chose you. You didn't choose me. He came and pursued his own followers. And he said, come and follow me. And he sought them out and he picked them out. But then he goes even further than this. He sets himself apart from any other rabbi because he says, look, you guys, you disciples, you are not my servants. You are going to serve me, but you're more than that to me. You are going to be my friends. I don't just want to teach you. I don't just want you to follow me. I don't want you to just think I'm some smart guy. I want a relationship with you. And this is absolutely radical in this day and age, that a rabbi would actually seek this out from his followers, that he wasn't above them. He wasn't the wise, learned scholar. He wanted to be with them. And not only this, he said, I want to share in the joy with you. I want to walk through this ministry. My successes will be your successes. I want to go through this with you. I don't just want to do this and have you listen. I want to be with you in this. And there's no greater picture for ministry than this to me. Because when I step back and I think of that statement, this is truly a profound statement, you guys. Because the truth is, and Pastor Rich says this all the time, and I love it. He says, we are God's plan A, and there is no plan B. And this is what's amazing. Could Jesus Christ himself come here and do a much better job at evangelism and leading the church than we do in his absence? And the crazy thing is, he says, you know what? I don't care if I can do it better. I want to do it with you. You're my boy. You're my girl. And I want to do it with you. No matter how messy this gets, it's kind of been a lesson for me in parenthood. It's been a beautiful picture for this for me. When I do things with my daughter, it usually takes a lot longer and gets a lot messier than if I just do it myself. Do you know this in parenthood? Like just the other day, sitting on the couch with baby Peyton. She's 2.5. You know, she's sitting on my lap. We're eating some jelly beans. And Peyton decides she can hold it herself, you know. Okay, here you go. Here's the jelly beans. Whoop! They go right down the couch, you know, right in between the crease, and it goes down under inside the couch. I'm just like, oh, Peyton. So I go and I get the flashlight. I kick up the seat, you know, so I can get under there. I got the flashlight down. I'm laying on the ground. I'm grabbing jelly beans, and all of a sudden I feel this body and head plop right on top of mine. And she's looking down there with me. Dad, can I help? Daddy, can I help? I said, no, sweetheart, I got it. And I'm grabbing these jelly beans. Dad, can I hold the flashlight? Daddy, can I hold the flashlight? She comes from a different angle, gets right in front of me so I can't see anymore. Dad, can I hold the flashlight? Can I help? I'm just thinking, I just want to get all these jelly beans out of here. I don't want ants. And so finally I say, okay, here's the flashlight. And all of a sudden she's holding the flashlight and she's putting her hand in front of it. She's looking up at other things. She's shining it in her face. And I'm thinking, you know what? Can you, Peyton, shine it over here. I'm trying to see where the jelly beans are. And then I grab the flashlight from her. I say, you grab some jelly beans. And she grabs one, and she's looking at it. This one's green. You know, I'm like, yes, it's green. Put it in the bag. It took us 20 minutes to grab all those jelly beans. But you know what? I would take those 20 minutes any day over the 1 minute it took to do it myself. Because I can sit here, and I can laugh and joke, and I can go, oh, life with her is just incredible. And the beauty of that is that's exactly how God sees it with us. God doesn't just want us to follow him. He just doesn't want us to obey him. He wants to do life with us. He said, I want you to share in this joy of ministry with me. I don't want you to just be a part of it because you have to be a part of it. I don't want you to obey because you feel the duty of it. I want you to have the joy with me. I want it to be our mission. I want it to be our joy. I want it to be our successes. I want to be friends with you in this. Friends, that's not me saying this. That's the Creator God of the universe saying, let's be friends. Let's do it together. This is truly an incredible statement. And the more amazing thing about this is he says this statement to his disciples. But then he says one verse that opens it up. And he says, this isn't just for you all. This is for anybody. Anybody can be my friend if they follow my command. I want to be everybody's friend. If they follow my command, they're my friend. And so we have to ask the question, you know, this is radical, God. You want to be my friend. You want a relationship with me. What is the command I have to follow? And he tells us in the passage, he says this, love others as I love them. Love them sacrificially. Love them with a love that has no boundaries. Be willing to die for one another. Truly love one another. Follow that one command. And you're my friend. Because then we have a common interest. You all. We both love everybody. And we can be friends. Love others like that and you're a friend of Jesus. Not a follower. Not a servant. But a friend. And that's truly incredible. But then we also have to look at this passage in another way because we can also learn from this passage how God intends for us to be friends with one another. You see, we can learn a lot about being a friend from this passage. If you were to ask the people of this world, tell me what you expect from a friend of yours, what would it be? Because, see, I spent way too much time online today looking at this. I went to all these little hokey websites of how to be a good friend. And here's a whole bunch of the advice that I heard, okay? What you can expect out of a friend, or what you should expect out of a friend. This is what all this stuff you can find online. They should always be there for you. They should listen to you no matter what. They should be kind. They should be loyal to you. They should try to improve your life. They should cheer you up. They should accept you as you are without any conditions. They should remain friends with you despite the choices you make in life. They should not judge you. They should be respectful. They should not use you. They should be honest to you. They should apologize when they make a mistake. They should be dependable. They should keep their promises. They should support you no matter what. They should not put you down. They won't deliberately hurt you. They should enjoy your company. They should choose to like you. They should laugh with you. They should cry with you. They should stick with you no matter what. What would you add to that? What do you expect from your friends? What else? Anybody? It's a pretty big list, but there's other things. Sure. What else do you expect from your friends? Can one person say one thing so we can move on? Go for it. What? Keep you accountable. Okay, what else? They should pray for you. Okay. Good. Now we can move on. Okay. But what's interesting is if you flip the question around, if we ask the first question of what should you be able to expect from your friends, but if we flip that question around, what should your friends be able to expect from you? It's a different question. All of a sudden, you start hearing words like. Well, they can like expect to be, they should be, or they could sort of be. All of a sudden, when it's us being the friend, we have a different standard. We have different limitations and boundaries on what that means. And the biggest problem is this. We battle our own selfishness and pride. When the question is, what kind of friend should we be to them, all of a sudden we have to wrestle with, how far am I willing to give of myself? How far am I willing to allow myself to go? How much of myself am I going to give out in this? And we have to begin to wrestle with, what's too far? What's too hard? What's too much? And the incredible thing about the passage that we read earlier is Jesus sets a very high bar, very high bar, of what people should expect from us as a friend. He says, as a Christian, in the world of friendship, this is what people should expect from you. And here's what he says. The first one is this, that we should love our friends obediently. Love our friends obediently. And what that means is that we should be honest with them. We should put the best construction on things. When there's a misspoke or anything that we could take the wrong way, that we put the best construction on it. We don't jump to the worst possible scenario. We jump to the best possible scenario. That we are trustworthy with them. We are loyal to them. We respect them. We do not gossip about them. We should love them obediently. That's the first thing he teaches us. The second thing he teaches us is that we should share life with them. That we should share in our joys. We should share in our lives. We should not hold back from them. But we should join in life together. And this is difficult for us because I think if you're like me, a lot of times it can be very easy to compartmentalize friends. We can have work friends. We can have, if you're, a stay-at-home mom, we can have go-to-the-park friends. We can have shopping friends. We can have church friends. We can have neighborhood friends. It's very easy for us to compartmentalize. And the problem with that is this. We can become self-serving in our friendships. Where, you know what, I don't want to be alone in this arena, so I'm going to have a friend that I only look for in this arena. I don't let them into the other areas of my life. I don't truly want to grow in my friendship with them. I want them to serve this little need I have. That at work, I want to have somebody to talk to about my favorite show. But I don't want to know more about their family than I have to. I don't want to have to engage in a deeper friendship with them. I want to keep them in this boundary, in this box, and that serves me best. And what Jesus tells us in this passage is we are to share lives with our friends. That we are to share our joys and our sorrows. That we are should be able to grow deep with our friends. And not just have friends that are self-serving for us. Not have agenda-seeking friends. Where we say, you know what, it would be good for me for my job if I was friends with that person. It would be good for me socially if I was with that person. And a lot of times it's very easy to be self-serving with our friendships. Well, at work, I should have a friend, so I have somebody to talk to, but I don't really care about them that much. and I'm going to hold them at bay. Have you ever had that happen to you? Have you ever had a friend that you tried to go deeper with and you could tell they just weren't interested? They just wanted to use you for what they had you for? How did that feel? But we can very easily do it to one another. The third thing we can learn from this passage is this, that we are to pursue friends. If the God of the universe coming down to earth sought out friends, what does that tell us? That we were made for relationship. The God who needs nothing still sought out friends because we were made for relationships. And so to be a person that says, well, I don't have friends, I don't need friends. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. We were made to be in relationship. And not us. And on the other side of this, you know, we should pursue friends, not selfishly sit back and say, well, I'll be friends with people that think I'm great and want to be friends with me. I'll be friends with the people that come and they do all the hard work. No, we should be doing the hard work of building friendships. That's on us too. And it also means this, that we shouldn't pick and choose our friends just by what's easy, but we should pursue friendships with those who need friends as well. Think about this. The God of the universe wants to be friends with you. There are times you are not a very good friend. Some might say you are not a very good catch. But God doesn't put up barriers to who he's friends with. And God actually pursues even the hardest to love, and even the most difficult to love, and even the most awkward to love. God pursues them, as should we. We were made to pursue friends, and we were made to pursue relationships. And it can be very easy to not want to engage in a relationship because we think it might take a lot from us. But that's not a reason to not pursue it. The fourth thing we learn from this is we should be willing to commit all the way. And this kind of goes back to a previous point as well. But Jesus said that we are to sacrifice for our friends, even willing to lay down our life for our friends. I remember when I was a young boy, I was very, very young. I was living with my mom in Tampa. And, you know, you just have these random memories. And we were driving to the grocery store, and we were going by this big lake. And I remember my mom telling me that the day before, a woman had lost control of her car and drove into that lake. And a stranger she didn't know swam out there and swam down and pulled her out of her car and rescued her. And she said, Justin, that's the type of man I want you to be. That you would do that for a stranger. And I remember that to this day. And that spoke to me in that moment, and I still remember that. And when I think of this, being willing to sacrifice, and the actual laying down of your life, a lot of us say, you know what, for my family, if my family was in jeopardy, I would lay down my life. If my best friend was in jeopardy, I would take a bullet for them. I would lay down my life for them. But the beauty of what God is saying, the beauty of what Jesus did, is did he pick and choose who he laid his life down for? Jesus laid down his life for those that even rejected him and continue to reject him. Jesus laid down his life for those that say, I don't care that you laid down my life. And we should have that selfless love for one another. That a lot of times I think we're hesitant to grow in relationships with those that are incredibly in despair and crisis because we don't want to take on that burden. We don't want to be there for that person that we can see is going to truly have a crisis and truly be a burden to us. But the thing is God tells us to sacrifice all the way. When you commit to somebody, commit all the way. Don't be a half-hearted friend. Don't be a limited friend. Don't be a friend that when you know this person has a need that you mysteriously can't be found on the phone or any emails or anything. Oh, yeah, I didn't get all those. Sorry. That when we're a friend, we go all the way. And we sacrifice and we even lay down our lives for one another. The fifth thing that we learn from this is that we should model Jesus to our friends. that in our friendship, they should be able to see Jesus in us, and that we can model Jesus to them, that we can show the attributes of Jesus to them. We can give them good godly wisdom. We can encourage them in good godly things. We can lift them up in good godly ways. We should model Jesus to them. And the sixth and last point is the converse of that, that Jesus held his, Jesus really wanted this point to be heard. The sixth and final point is this, that we should hold our friends to godly standards as well. Jesus did put standards on his friendship, did he not? He said, my friends are those who do what I command. And we as friends, out of love for one another, should be willing to put godly standards on our friends. A lot of times for the sake of the friendship, we don't say, you know what? That's really not a good decision. You know what? You shouldn't talk about your spouse that way. You know what? I don't think you should spend your money that way. You know what? That's not a godly way to raise your children. That's not a godly way to live in your marriage. A lot of times we're afraid to say something like that for the sake of the friendship, but Jesus tells us that we should put godly standards on our friends out of love for them and care for them. And that's difficult, but we're called to. And all of this, as I say this, chief of sinners right here. I truly was convicted writing this. I need to be a better friend to my friends. And of all things, this is so ironic. Last night, 8 o'clock at night, I get a phone call from a random number out of Texas. And I'm like, what is this? And so I pick it up and it's my old friend Scott, who is actually in my wedding. And he's like, hey. And I was like, hey. And he said, do you not know who this is? And I said, nope. And he said, you didn't save my number in your phone? And I said, who is this? And he said, this is Scott McKnight. And I thought, oh, man. I said, did you get a new number? He said, no. No, I've had this number for a couple years since I moved to Fort Worth. And I said, wow, has it really been that long since we talked? And so of all things, as I'm preparing to write a sermon about being a good friend, here is a guy who is in my wedding who I haven't connected to in years. And it was a good humbling moment. Thank you, God, for this. A good humbling moment of me to be reminded that friendship takes burden. He made excuses for me. He was like, well, you know, you're busy and you got the kids. And he made all these excuses for me, but truthfully, I could have called. I could have kept up that relationship. I've been lazy and I've been not a good friend. And that's what's hard about friendship is it takes a relationship and it takes working towards a relationship. And it's a burden. And the incredible thing is if we get frustrated and we think, oh, it's such a burden to keep up these friendships, we have to remember that Jesus sought to keep a friendship with us and the burden he took on was dying for us. He went to that length to keep up our relationship. Surely you can give a friend a call once a month. And this is the incredible thing I want to close with tonight. And I'm glad we get to take communion tonight in this time of reflection and confession. It is, I want you to truly take a moment and truly let it sink in that we serve a God who doesn't want just our praise, doesn't want just our obedience, but truly just wants a relationship with us. Who says, I want you to be my friend. Let me ask you this. Do you think God needs friends? Do you think he needs friends? No. But he wants you to be his friend. Desperately wants you to be his friend. To be in relationship with you, to talk to you every day, talk to you multiple times a day, to laugh with you, to cry with you, to walk through this life with you. He seeks you out. He doesn't just say, I'm your God, you need to bow down, fear me, and worship me. He says, I love you. Let's be friends. Friends, your God wants to be your friend. And he wants you to be a good friend to those around you. That's an incredible God, is it not? And we got some work to do we not? And I pray that God would bless you to be a good friend to him and be a good friend to those around you. And all God's people said, amen.